We're doing Gemara Gittin. We're up to Nivav Amud Aleph, the stories of the destruction of the temple. We had seen that Rabbi Yochanan, the Amora, Rabbi Yochanan, the compiler of the Jerusalem Talmud, the disciple of Rabbi Yanai, the Rebbe of Rabbi Elazar ben Pidas, and Reish Lakish, also brother-in-law of Reish Lakish, Rabbi Yochanan said that the verse Ashrei Adam Mefached Tamid, praised is a person who is always concerned, Umaksheli Bo Yipol Bera'a, and he who hardens his heart will fall in evil. And off of that pasuk, Rabbi Yochanan said, over a grasshopper and its son, Jerusalem was destroyed. And then Rabbi Yochanan clarified, there was this man named son of a grasshopper, Bar Kamtza, who was slighted at an event. He was asked to leave, and he decided that if the rabbis didn't protest, so then they're obviously approving of his being kicked out of the event, and as such, he went to the Caesar and said that the Jews are rebelling, and he says, I'll prove it to you, send along a sacrifice, and they won't agree to offer it. When they're approaching the temple, Bar Kamtza blemishes the sacrifice in a way that the Romans wouldn't notice, and the Jews see the blemish, so the rabbis were in conflict. Should we sacrifice it anyways, so that we shouldn't cause a rift with the Roman emperor? They weren't aware that this was a test. Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkula said, people will misunderstand the law. They'll think you may sacrifice a blemished animal. They said, let's kill Bar Kamtza. He shouldn't report us. Rabbi Zechariah said, people will think that by blemishing an animal, you get the death penalty. So it became, we see, they knew that Bar Kamtza had blemished the animal. Yes, sir.
Why don't we just blame the messenger? Really, it was all his fault.
So that's a good question. You'll notice Rabbi Yochanan did not say because of Bar Kamtza the temple was destroyed. Rabbi Yochanan says because of Kamtza and Bar Kamtza the temple was destroyed, right? What did Kamtza do? Let's move forward and we have to revisit that question. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, we are holding the third wide line, the end of the line, the last word of the line, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Anvitanuto shel Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas, the humility, the patience of Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas, that he was willing to put up with Bar Kamtza and did not have him executed, Hechriva et Beitenu, brought about the destruction of our house. The temple he's calling our house. Vesarefa et Eichaleinu, and burnt down our house of worship. Vehiglitanu me'artzeinu, and caused us to be exiled from our land. So the Roman emperor gets word that the Jews, in fact, did not sacrifice his animal. And so he's going to send his general to punish them. Yes?
So I've heard people take this to mean that Rabbi Zechariah was so like into doing his exact letter of the law, other people thinking that his whole problem was more that he didn't look at the big picture and see what was really going to happen if he followed the exact letter of the law. People use that to mean different things, but it's not also one law.
Let's ask a few questions. Could anyone just access the emperor just like that? If I felt like going to the emperor, could I get in? It would seem obvious that not. How did Bar Kamtza get in? Seems that Bar Kamtza was a man of political clout. And as such, it also seems that there was a grave error on multiple levels here. Aside from the audacity of the host for kicking out a guest, the host kicked out the guest in front of everyone, and everyone was silent because they all felt confident that nothing bad could happen. So imagine for a minute that, what's the name of the guy who flew in last night? From the U.S.?
John Kerry.
John Kerry. Yeah, so imagine Kerry walks in and let's think for a minute. Imagine Kerry walks in and Netanyahu tells him, you know, I don't have time for you. Why don't you go play pool? And it's in front of the whole Knesset, and the Knesset, everyone starts waving, bye, John, enjoy your pool. What would happen? You'd say, hey, guys, wait a second. He has connections to that man named Obama. You guys don't want to do that. That's not such a smart thing to do. So this Bar Kamtza obviously had political clout, and yet everyone was super comfortable with him being kicked out publicly, thrown out to the street, and you see Bar Kamtza says, hey, wait a second. How come everyone was silent there? Obviously they're all in on this. And so Bar Kamtza makes a very bad move, but they should have been concerned he would make that bad move. Now, this isn't my pshat. Tosfos over here says that the indication of the verse, Ashrei Adam Mefachet Tamid, is that they should have been concerned that Bar Kamtza could do this to them. Why weren't they concerned? Because they said, hey, things are great here. We have peace, we have tranquility, there's nothing bad's going to happen, so he can kick Bar Kamtza out.
He was willing to pay for the party too, which was he maybe had some sort of...
Right. Well, that you could argue that a guy like this can't be trusted when he offers to pay. I'm saying that's arguable whether the offer was real and whether he had the money to back it, but it would definitely seem like he did. Yes?
Wouldn't that be also safe to say that, based on what we have, that it's almost like this implicit suggestion that the people here at the party, the host, so on, all the parties, the rabbis, and so have, and maybe the Jewish people implicitly, have some sort of, there's some sort of suggestion that they should be worrying, or they should actually be taking upon them, their shoulders, the responsibility of some person who comes along and does something bad. Is that really true? Is that the case? Or is that misunderstood?
I think the claim against them is they should have been concerned that this could happen. That Bar Kamtza could bring about a terrible relationship with the Romans, which he did.
So you could say also that they acted a little bit arrogant to some extent.
Right.
Further, but even then, all that said, it's like there's the suggestion that they should have foreseen and maybe taken upon the responsibility themselves the potential evil action of some bad person or some non-Jew. Here it seems that, or maybe he is Jewish.
He is Jewish. Seems he's Jewish.
It's a big responsibility to foresee someone else's actions. Right? How can you do that?
I think we have to bear in mind the potential.
the indication here is that they had an idea, they had a notion, that at least an inkling of his clout.
Yes.
First and second, that maybe they also, adding the arrogance on top, probably had an idea that he might not like that or something like that.
For sure.
Okay.
For sure, yeah.
Furthermore?
That's what Tosa seems to say. They should have taken into account that they were so confident in the peaceful economic times they had that they weren't worried. So Bar Kamtza is slighted, so Bar Kamtza is upset. What do you mean? He could cause all this to change, and they should have been worried. And, sometimes when there's a lull, so people overlook the dangers. Why do markets crash? Because people are overly confident. That's one of the reasons it's hard to believe there's going to be a crash so soon, because everyone keeps talking about the potential crash. It's in the headlines already for a few years. Everyone's talking about the market's going to crash. When you keep talking about it, that's usually when it's not going to happen. When people feel like, no, it's only going up from here, that's when it's... Yes?
Is it possible that, well, he was called Grasshopper, so that he started out, when all this happened, he was a nobody, and then he worked his way up just despite the Jews? So why was he called the Grasshopper?
That, I said, we might come back, if you guys will choose to learn the Maharal in depth, the explanation of this whole story, we might still do that.
Do that.
We'll see if people want to. Maybe Thursday night we'll have a class on that. Yes?
So, what you said next to it?
I didn't get up to your question yet. I'm saying, so, step one, we see that Bar Kamtso was a potential threat. So, the deliberation here of what should be done with Bar Kamtso was a real deliberation. It wasn't so simple to say, you know, just bump him off. One of the great causes for the destruction was the killing of Roman governors. They did kill Roman governors, and that also brought the Roman wrath on them. And Chazal don't seem to blame Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas for being limited. Rashi explains, anavtunuto savlanut shesaval et ze velo harago, that patience, that he was willing to put up with this and not execute him, which is ordinarily a virtue, that patience, that humility. In this case, it was misplaced, was misapplied. But to broaden that interpretation, you'd have to have a source. That's not how Rashi interprets the Gemara.
This follow on from the fact that we're told that one of the reasons for the Harban was the fact that everyone was in each other's like throats or whatever at the time of the Second Temple. So we read that there's a guy here and his enemy here is Bar Kamtso, so maybe this is just like a little piece of what Hazal are trying to tell us was a large story.
Let's see, because it doesn't, that's not the direction Rabbi Yochanan is portraying. And definitely from the story, we start understanding that maybe the host was right in hating Bar Kamtso. Yeah. By the end of the story, we should all hate Bar Kamtso.
Yeah.
So, I'm saying, so we're not given the backdrop as to why the host hated Bar Kamtso. It just says he was his enemy. So at first glance, the Gemara seems to be saying what Akiva said. It's part of the sinas chinam of the time. And yet, Rabbi Yochanan did not say sinat chinam, baseless hatred, brought about the destruction. Mm. Meaning there are Gemaros that say that, but that's not what it's saying here.
But he did say Kamtso brought about the and Bar Kamtso.
Oh, he says over Kamtso and Bar Kamtso. Ah, Kamtso and Bar.
So he's saying maybe he's trying to...
Let's wait and see.
Something small is getting the name wrong.
Could be. Just a second, Yaakov was waiting.
It does sound like more of like a title or like a poetic or like a lead into the story, like over to say that the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed over a mistake of a couple letters, bar versus no bar in a person's name, and then lead into a story.
Fine.
Like say that's like a the Kamtso literally had something to do with it or whatever. Like
I definitely agree in pshat. In pshat, yes. There's probably more depth, but in pshat, I definitely agree. Yes. Yes, Vinny.
I thought that there was a Gemara that the Second Temple was destroyed because people weren't saying the bracha of Natan Torah before they read, because it became more of like learning how to do things and not a way of connecting to God.
Doesn't it say that about the first temple? It says about the second temple? I think it says about the first temple. Let's see if I can find it.
Isn't it a question of why the land was lost?
Right. Okay, so the Gemara in Tractate Yuma, if you want, we'll learn that next, says that Gemara in Tractate Yuma says it was over Sinat Chinam. And then let's see somewhere here the Gemara says about Ashlo Berchu Batorat China. Let's see if I can find it. Just one second. Maybe it is. I don't remember. I have to look it up. Because the verse is in the Prophet Al Mavda Aretz about the first temple, but whether Chazal dashed about the first or second temple, I don't remember. I have to find it. I think it's somewhere here, but I'm not seeing it right now. But Sinat Chinam is here, and Yuma Tetamugde. So I have to look. Okay, back to our Gemara in Gittin. Shadar alayon le Niron Kesav. So he sent against them Niron. Kikat, ishadagir le Mizrach. So when he came, he decided to do some kind of sorcery, some magic to see what should happen. He's standing near Jerusalem. He shoots to the east. His arrow lands in Jerusalem. Lemarav, he turns around, he shoots to the west. The arrow lands in Jerusalem. Le'al baruchot ha-shamayim, he shoots in all four directions. And every arrow heads back and hits Jerusalem. Amar li li'inuka psok li psukech. He meets a child, he asks him, what verse have you been learning? Amar le'i, he tells him, I'll tell you what verse I've been learning. Venatati et nikmati be'edom biyadami Yisrael. I will take revenge from the Edomites through my people, my nation Israel. Amar kutshabrichu ba'o lechuvei beite. He says, God, the Holy One, wants to destroy his home. Uvai lechfuri yadei ba'u gavra. And he wants to clean his hands with me. He says, I know what's going to happen. He's going to use me as part of Edom to destroy his home. And then he's going to pay me back for that. He's using me, but in the end he'll punish me for it. Arak, so he ran away. Va'azan ve'igaya. And he converted to Judaism. Niron ran away from the task. He's supposed to lead the destruction of Jerusalem. And he tells himself this is wrong. In the end, God's going to pay me back if I do this. And he converts to Judaism. Menafak minei Rabbi Meir. And one of his descendants, only a short while later, was the great Rabbi Meir, one of the greatest Tanoim that ever lived. Rabbi Meir. It says, if you only merited to see Rabbi Meir's face as he was teaching, you'd already become a greater person. Shadrei Luyei Lespisianus Kesar. So they sent Vespasian, who would still be the Caesar. Ata Tzaraleit Latshanei. Vespasian lays siege over Jerusalem for 3 years. Havubu hanutlata tire. There were three wealthy people in Jerusalem. Nakdimon ben Guryon, that was his name. Ben Kalba Savua, that was his nickname. And Ben Tzitzita Keset. What's so funny?
Ben Tzitzita Keset.
Haketzet, Ben Tzitzita Keset. We're going to explain each one. Why were they given these nicknames? Nakdimon ben Guryon was given that nickname, Shenakdalo Chama Bavuro, that the sun shone in his honor. What does that mean? Well, one time the Jews were ascending to the temple for the regel, and there was no water for people to drink. It was a dry year. So he went to a Roman and said, you have a lot of pits filled with water. Let me purchase your pits with water so that the Jews who ascend to the temple will have what to drink. So the Roman said, fine, and how will you repay me? So he says, well, their value is such and such bars of gold. Give me until this and this date, and if I either I give you back your pits filled with water, or I give you this and this much gold. So the day comes, all the Jews are coming up to the Temple Mount, they all have plenty of water to drink, Nachtimum and Gurion took good care of them, and the time comes after the regal, the day comes that he's supposed to give back the pits. The Roman sends a messenger in the morning and says, give me back my pits with water, or the amount of gold we agreed. So Nachdimon tells the messenger the time hasn't come yet. So he waits till midday and he sends a messenger a second time, and Nachdimon again says the day's not over yet. So the Roman starts laughing, all year it hasn't been raining, it's the summer months now, now you're going to have rain. And he calls his lad and says, come, I'm going to take a hot bath and I'm going to come out and go collect all that money from the rabbi. I'm going to be so wealthy. And he's headed to the bathhouse. As he goes to the bathhouse, Nachdimon Ben Gurion heads up to the temple. He puts on his talus and tefillin, and he goes into the temple and says, God, you know, I didn't do this for me. I did it in your honor. Your children were headed up here. Now I need your help. And as he's praying, the sky, which was beautiful blue sky, sun shining, suddenly the sky gets covered with clouds and it starts pouring and the wells are full. Nachdimon Ben Gurion comes out of the temple thanking God. He's on his way home and he bumps into the Roman who's come out of his bathhouses. And the Roman looks at him and says, I know that God only did this for you. But you see how cloudy? You see how dark it is? So now the water fell in my pits. It's nighttime already. The pits are again mine. You gave them back to me empty. And so now pay me the gold because that's my water that's in the pits. So Nachdimon Ben Gurion does an about face. He goes back into the temple and says, God, please let the sun shine again so everyone will know that you paid back on time. And with that, all the clouds scattered and the sun shone. And that's why he was called Nachdimon Ben Gurion. Because the sun Nakdalo Chama Avuro. The sun shone on his behalf. Notice the rain was not why he was given the nickname. Rain, it's arguable, you know. But the fact that it rained and then stopped and then the sun shone. So then he got this nickname, Nachdimon Ben Gurion. Ben Kalba Savua, I'm sorry, yes, Yaakov.
Can I tell the source we're looking for on what the land is lost? It's in Nadarim.
Nadarim, yeah. Where?
Nadarim 81.
Yeah. Okay, Nadarim sounds right. Thank you. Mia Isha Chacham Yavinzot. Yeah. So the verse is talking about. The verse is talking about the first temple. I think it's. You have to say it's talking about the first temple period. Let's see. Seems to me like it's talking about the first temple period. But once you quoted that Gemara, I want you guys to hear the full Gemara because you guys have to know this Gemara. Talking about the first temple. You guys have to know this Gemara. So we'll take a break for 1 second. We'll read this Gemara. Shalchu mitam. They sent from there, from Israel, they sent the following message. Hizahu b'avuviyata, hizahu b'chavua, hizahu b'vnei anihim. Be careful. They warned them. Be careful with laundry. Laundry is important because people can get diseases if you don't take laundry. be careful to learn Torah in groups, because the groups strengthen one another. You can't, if you think you're going to succeed in learning Torah alone, you can go to some university far out and just click online. It's important, if you're there, click online, zone in and learn. But if you really want to grow, you got to come and be a part of the group. That's the way you're really going to grow. And be careful with the children of the poor. Shemehin teitze Torah. Because Torah comes from the children of the poor. Shenemar, as the verse says, we just read it, when Bilam blesses the people, he says, Yizalmai midaliav. Water pours from its buckets. What does that mean? So the word can also mean water is a code in Torah for Torah. Torah is called water. And daliav could also mean the poor, from the word dal. Dal means poor. The water will pour out from those that are impoverished. Shemehen tetzetoha, the sons of those who are impoverished, they will be the ones who will ultimately give forth Torah. Umipnei ma en mitzuyin talmidei chachamim natzet talmidei chachamim ibnehem. Why is it that you do not often find a Talmid Chacham whose own children are Talmidei Chachamim? Amar Rav Yosef Shlomo Torah Yerushalayim. Rav Yosef says, Rav Yosef himself was a rabbi. Rav Yosef says, because God decreed it so, that there's a special segula that a Talmid Chacham's children will not be Talmidei Chachamim, people shouldn't think it's an inheritance. People should realize it's accessible to all. People sometimes say, how do I become a rabbi? Do I have to be the son of a rabbi? No, that's the way not to become a rabbi. If you're the son of a rabbi, chances are you will not make it. The cards are stacked against you. Yeah, I tell my kids this all the time.
Don't you learn to
very often a kid thinks if my father is a rabbi, so it's a given I'll be a rabbi. Rav Sheshet Bred Ravidi Omer Kedesh Lo Yitgadru Al HaTzibur. Rav Sheshet Bred Ravidi says the reasoning is slightly different, because if the sons of rabbis are rabbis, so then people take control of the bench and they feel like, hey, I'm the boss here, who can budge me? We had Beinish said that. There's a judge on the Supreme Court who said, my father's on the Supreme Court, I'm on the Supreme Court, no one's going to tell me what to do here. Okay, so that's why in the rabbinate, God made it that it almost doesn't happen, that a rabbi's son is really going to make it to be a rabbi. Marzutra omer mipnei shehen mitgabrin al hatzibur. Marzutra says, because before he becomes a rabbi, he thinks that he knows what he's talking about, and he tells everyone what to do. So, if he's going to have so much clout, it's going to be problematic. Ravashi says, because when the kid grows up as son of a rabbi, he looks at people and calls them donkeys. He looks down at the masses. It's what? You
never did that.
You never did that. Okay, good for you. The question is, you have to understand it. I'll tell you why it's hard. Because what happens when a person grows up, there are certain things that are such a given for the kid. You know, he grows up, it's like he grows up with a lot of things being given. What you guys are learning here is common talk in the house. The kids ask a question, as we learn, so I try to answer it. So then the kids grow up with concepts that are easy for them. So you'd think that's a benefit. But then he comes to school, and then he talks to other people, and then he sees that other people don't have a given. You know, tell you a simple story. My son asked me, why don't I put out my tzitzis? So I said, because halachically it's very difficult to put your tzitzis out, because you're supposed to have two tzitzis in the front and two tzitzis in the back, and the tzitzis are also supposed to be hanging on the corner of the garment. So if you put your tzitzis out, it's very hard to keep the actual knot lying on the garment. It says, al kanfevi dem ledorotam. So I said, you know, if you get certain types of tzitzit, but I said, most of the time, people, when they put their tzitzis out, they want to look neat. So they put two together, right, through the belt. And then it looks neat, but it's not a fulfillment of the way that the Torah really wanted it. Because you're supposed to have the tzitzis hanging on the garment. And then once they're coming out of the pants, they're not hanging on the garment, they're flipping up. They're not lying on the garment, like the Torah says, HaKamfevik Dehim. And when you put two together, you don't have two in front and two in back. It says you're supposed to have two in front and two in back. So you want to look sloppy? It's very hard. So that was a mistake. I shouldn't have told him that. because he looks at me and says, oh, so I'm going to go to yeshiva and tell my Rebbe that he's got it all wrong.
Oh.
Right? So that's what happens. The kid looks and says, oh, my Rebbe's doing that. He's got it all wrong. So I shouldn't have told him. You know, usually I try not to get into that corner. Over here, I try it very often. He'll come home and ask me if they get stumped in class on a question. He'll come and ask me. And I always say, I don't know.
Here's a pun.
Ah. Very nice. Okay. No. Because it's very hard for, you know. So that's what it says over here. That very often if the kids, he can easily look down at people. I know that. Why doesn't everyone know that?
But the Rebbe has just had a fringe opinion.
Right. Yeah.
The person is still fulfilling the mitzvah d'oraita.
Correct. It's fulfilling the mitzvah d'oraita. For sure. And according to the Kabbalists, you should never put your tzitzis out. Good thing to know, right?
How did I ameliorate the situation?
I said to him, you know.
No.
I said to him, you know, I think it's a chutzpah for a student to come to his teacher and tell him he's doing something wrong, especially when both of us know that the student isn't doing it for the sake of heaven. I just told him that, you know. Let's be realistic. You just want to show him you're smarter than him. It has nothing to do with the sake of heaven. So even if it were for the sake of heaven, there'd be room to discuss whether it's right or wrong. Rav Shlomo Zalman said that a person has to think 10 times before he does a stringency in his home, because if you're going to do stringency and your son's going to go to his Rebbe's house and see that the Rebbe doesn't do it, so then he'll start thinking, what does my Rebbe know? And he won't respect him and won't learn from him. So you have to be very careful of what perspective you give your kids. I'm giving you an example of a mistake I made, but that's what he's saying here. That hinders a child's capacity to grow. Because if you look down at people and you feel like, hey, I know what they don't know, you're not going to learn from them. And you're not going to be able to grow. In order for a person to grow, he has to be humble. The second a person has arrogance, that limits his capacity for growth. The more arrogance, the less growth. The two don't go together. Yes?
There have been very big rabbis. The sons have become also big rabbis. Cooking with Judah.
They worked very, very hard. They worked very, very hard. They prayed very hard. It doesn't say it's an impossibility. It said it's uncommon. Rav Shlomo Zalman also succeeded. And each one was asked, and they gave different answers what tools they used. Rav Shlomo Zalman said in his house he would never let someone mock any Talmud Chacham. He said, they asked him, why is it that his sons came out as Talmidei Chachamim? And he said, because in my house, we gave respect for every Talmud Chacham. And as such, there was a general respect for Torah. When they asked the Stipler why his son Rav Kanievsky became a Talmud Chacham, so he said, you have no idea how many tears I spilled by his crib and how much I davened him for him till today not to go off the derech. His son, you know, at age 14 already wrote compilations on Midrashim. And the son's like a super genius, finished out who knows how many times, and his father's saying, I'm still davening, he should stay on the path, right? Yeah, so there are different answers, but they're all true. Yeah. Okay, so I just want you guys to know this Gemara. We'll go a drop further. Ravina says, when they come to learn Torah, they don't make a blessing before they learn Torah. And then we have this quote that you all knew already, that Rav Yehuda said in the name of Rav, that no one could figure out why the first temple was destroyed. Even the prophets couldn't figure it out, even the angels couldn't figure it out, until God himself said, because they wouldn't make a blessing before they learned Torah. And the sons of Talmidei Chachamim also aren't careful to make a blessing. They're always learning Torah. It seems like it's a constant. And no, they have to make a blessing. And part of the blessing of learning Torah is, we say, may we and our children and our grandchildren always merit to learn Torah. So maybe this is part of the previous idea, that it's a given, of course, my dad's learning Torah, I'm going to learn Torah, why not? Doesn't work that way. I can tell you, there's a family here in the neighborhood where the father of blessed memory was a big tzaddik and Talmud Chacham, and the grandfather and the great-grandfather, for generations already. They're a family of high stature, real quality people. And I once spoke to the widow, the rabbi's widow, and I asked her how she gets her kids to learn Torah. So she said, every kid that ends high school in his 11th grade year, I tell him, you're going straight to the army, no yeshiva for you. It's chaval, you don't need it, go do the army. She said, to the kids, I tell them, you're going to the army. Then I go into my bedroom and I pray that they should fight me and say, no, Imam, I want to learn Torah. And I make it that learning Torah is not a given in their life. They spend 11th grade in fear that I'm not going to let them continue to learn Torah. And then they hit 12th grade and we spend weeks fighting it out. No, you can go to the army. What do you have to go to yeshiva for? In the bedroom, I pray they should go learn Torah. Outside the bedroom, I say, come on, take advantage of this year. Who needs next year? You want to learn this year. Next year, go do the army. And she told me that's how she did it with each child, slowly. And then the kids all fought back. And then each time she'd say, you know what, we'll delay the army by half a year. For half a year you could learn, and then you'll go. And each time they took advantage of the half a year that way. It wasn't a given. It wasn't obvious I could learn Torah. It's like, no. So by doing that, the children cherished it. If they take it as a given, sure, my father, my grandfather, everyone was learning. I'm going to keep learning. So then you don't take advantage of the time. People end up taking it for granted. They assume they'll get somewhere without putting any work. So that's you don't even make a blessing over it. It's just like a given. Yeah, I'm learning. Yes. Okay.
That's the right way to do it.
It takes skill. It's easier said than done. I'm just saying the attitude. That's what she said. Yes.
We talked about even before the show began about the necessity of such a defending Amistrom. I don't know, it seems sort of like sour in my mouth to threaten someone with not learning Torah. You can't learn Torah, put the feeling. What? if you really, really want to, you can sidestep doing this mitzvah, put the feeling, and then you can learn Torah instead. So it feels is that maybe that's not appropriate? This is totally pure concept, or I don't know how to relate to what the
rabbi means. What would be if she would say, instead of the army, what would be if she would say, instead of going to yeshiva next year, why don't you go work in a soup kitchen all week? Would that be okay with you? Right? So that's what she was saying. Go help other people. Leave the base medrash. So she took that example because that's the next step in the Dati Lumi world. After you finish high school, you have a choice. Are you going to do Hezder? Are you going to do Army? Are you going to do Yeshiva? So she took the opposite extreme. I'm saying, but it would be no different if she'd say, one of the grandparents there was the chief rabbi of the Air Force. It's not a family that mocks the Army. She took that example. I don't think she meant it in a derisive way.
It wasn't deceptive.
Wasn't the Torah study supposed to be a greater mitzvah? So even if she didn't in a decisive way, you can. It seems like you sort of can't do that anyway.
Bottom line, you have 24 hours in a day. If you're in a soup kitchen, you're not in a base medrash. If you're in the army, you're not in a base medrash. Could be you're helping other people, but you're not in a base medrash. Not everyone's Yaakov Cheskis who could show up and learn as much. Most people, even if they're in the army, they don't learn that much. It's exceptional that you're here tonight. It's exceptional. You come in every Friday. What?
I'm on break.
Okay, so then most of the time you can't be here learning. You have a choice.
And you can also learn in the soup kitchen.
Right, but you're not going to get to the same place. There's no one's coming to put down the work that you or anyone else is doing. At the same time, there are only 24 hours in a day, and there's a certain amount of growth you're just not going to get if you're not putting in 18 to 20 hours a day in any field. So she was telling them, okay, you'll learn 2 hours a day, you'll learn 3 hours a day. Go invest the rest of your time elsewhere. But I'm saying she could have just said soup kitchen too. She said this because that's the next step. So
between
For most people who go after high school straight to the army, there's no, you can't come back too well. It's very hard. You need to go to college. You need to build a family. It's not such a simple option to say, I'll go to the army 3 years and then I'll learn. It's almost, you know, it's very, very hard afterwards to make that work.
As opposed to like just learning for 10 years straight.
Right. Right.
You're still not going to the university or whatever. You're still living.
Right. So, Thursday night, you want? We'll get back to that Thursday night. We've gone on too many tangents here. Let's finish this story, because we're really out of time. So, Vespasian came and lay siege. We said we had three wealthy people in Jerusalem. We explained who Nakhdimon Ben-Gurion was. Who's Ben-Kalba Savua? So, we know him, right? He was... You guys know, come on. Who was his son-in-law? Rabbi Akiva, right? He was so wealthy, they gave him this nickname, Kalba Savua, that you'd walk in hungry as a dog and walk out satiated. Ben Tzitzit HaKeset was given that name, that his tzitzis, when it dragged along, it would go, he would always have velvet beneath him. They'd have velvet pillows wherever he'd go, and that's a... His tzitzis would never touch the floor. He'd always have velvet beneath him.
But you see somebody sitting down, you see their tzitzit on the ground.
Didn't he just get shorter tzitzit?
Ikadam v'shaytak satom muteret ben gdolei rami. Others say that the reason he was called ben tzitzit hakeset is to indicate that his name was ben tzitzit. Hakeset is because his chair was among the giants of Rome. Okay. One of these philanthropists said, I have enough grain for all of you, wheat and barley. The other one said, I have enough wine. Wine doesn't spoil. I have enough salt. That doesn't spoil. And oil doesn't spoil. I have enough to sustain you with that. And the other one said, I have enough firewood. Now in Jerusalem, firewood is very precious, because we don't have too much wood in Jerusalem. So, v'shabachu avanan le'detzivei, and the rabbi said that the wood was most important. So they have a lot of sustenance in the city, and now the question is, how long can they hold out? They can hold out for 21 years. So they have all this wealth. Habubu hanu biryoni. Amongst the Jews, there were a bunch of hotheads who had little content, and all they wanted was war. That's something like a knight. You know, the knights in the Middle Ages, you know, they tried to make him out to be these wonderful people. All they were paid mercenaries who didn't know what to do with their spare time. All they could do was fight wars. They had no real content, so they'd always want to start a battle, because the worst thing a baron can do is leave his knights idle. They'll make trouble in the city. They don't know how to do anything. All they know how to do is fight wars. If there's no war, what are they going to do? Make trouble in the city, go to bars, get into brawls. You know, so there's nothing good is going to come out of it. So that's what they had in Jerusalem. They were stuck with a bunch of these hotheads who all they knew how to do was fight wars. Amalu Havanan, Nepuk Benevich Lama Badayu. The rabbi said, let's make peace with the Romans. Lo Shafkinu. So these guys drew their swords and said, rabbis, you are not making peace with the Romans. Amulu Nepuk Benevich Krava Badayu. They said, we're fighting them. The rabbi said, you're not going to succeed. You're not going to win. It was a ridiculous attempt. We hadn't had an organized army in centuries. The Romans came with the most organized force in the world. Well, get there. You're getting ahead of the story. So these biryonim went to the storage houses and burnt down the storage houses of wheat and barley. Vavekafna, and famine settled in the city of Jerusalem. So what are we going to do now? There's a danger. Good things will happen in the end. But first there's a destruction. But then there'll be good things coming. So we're going to pick up here, Bezrat Hashem, Thursday night.